Hi, friends, and welcome back to Sermonsmith. This is a podcast of conversations about the craft of sermon preparation. Have a great interview today. Really looking forward to sharing with you. But before we get on to it, I want to share a few show notes. First off is, really appreciate those of you who have been helping to spread the word. I'm finding that the main way people find Sermonsmith is when others pass it along to them. So tweeting, sharing on Facebook, that'd be really helpful to us. Another way that you can really help spread the word is through giving us reviews on iTunes. All of my podcast expert friends tell me that iTunes reviews are really helpful in helping a show get discovered by other people, especially who are looking through iTunes. So if you'd be willing to go there and leave us a review, I'd appreciate that very much. And one other little show note. I know that if you're listening to this, you are probably a podcast listener, and I love listening to podcasts. So occasionally I just want to make recommendations for other podcasts I really enjoy. One of those that I listen to quite often is Seminary Dropout, which is by my friend Shane Blackshear, who's also here in Austin. Shane just interviews different people from all areas of engaged Christianity. You know, people who are perhaps in full-time ministry or doing nonprofit work. Shane's an excellent interviewer. So if you don't listen to Seminary Dropout already, I encourage you to do so. You can find it at seminarydropout.com, but you can certainly find it on iTunes as well. Hope you'll check that out. My guest today is Dave Lomas. Dave is the founding pastor of Reality San Francisco. I'm excited about how this interview turned out. We did have to cut it a little bit short because we had some technical problems. But even so, I think there's a lot of great stuff to sift through here that Dave has to say. So without further ado, here's Dave Lomas.
Thank you for having me, John.
Yeah. It's fun. I'm excited. You are a friend of a friend, but I've heard many good things. So looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah.
Why don't you, let's jump right in. Why don't you tell us about the context? Tell us about the church where you preach.
Yeah, so I preach at a church called Reality in San Francisco, planted about 4.5 years ago. Started in a district called the Castro District in San Francisco. And from that time, from 4 years until today, the church has been, fairly successful, I guess you could say, if you're in church planting at all. Like, it's done well. It's been sustainable. There's life, in the church. We've had, I mean, all kinds of wonderful stories of people coming to Christ, baptisms, people, you know, really reaching and ministering and being woven into the fabric of the neighborhoods in San Francisco. It's been a really fun, I didn't think the church would do this well, but
What kind of space are you meeting in right now?
We started in a Swedish American hall, which was this historic, hall on Market Street in San Francisco. And then, I think 2 years in, we were running 4 services and it was just getting insane. Yeah. So people that preach all the time know that, gosh, anything over 3 is just silly. I'd hate it. And so we're doing 4 on a Sunday and it wasn't sustainable at all. Like, I know there's people that can do it, especially setting up and breaking down every day to where I didn't have this office to retreat to in the middle of the day, like go downstairs and there's my office or something that's air conditioned and nice. Or it was just, you walk in, you preach, and then you go home and rest for an hour or two and you go back and do the same thing, and it'd break everything down. And it was exhausting. And so, providentially this school opened up, and, right now we're the only church that meets in a school. San Francisco schools are not kind to churches.
Wow.
By our associate pastor, or actually executive pastor, he's a very hospitable man, went and almost wooed basically the staff there. And, we're meeting in this beautiful, built in 1920s, old, school that seats 1400 people. And it feels like you're in an auditorium. The architect that built the school built all these auditoriums around the city. So it feels like an auditorium when you walk inside. So it's awesome. There's a parking lot, classrooms for kids, and then a 1400 seat auditorium.
Wow.
So it's awesome.
I guess. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And how often do you preach?
Right now we're at, once a Sunday. So we have, 1400 people that show up plus set on a Sunday. We're contemplating going to 2 services, but I don't want to talk about that right now.
I even mean though, like, do you preach just about every week? Do you rotate?
Oh yes. I preach about every week. Yeah. I mean, I'll rotate out, maybe once every 4 or 5 weeks and either preach somewhere else, So I preach pretty much a majority of the Sundays.
Okay.
At our church or somewhere else. Yeah.
And so talk about, within the life of your community, what would you say is the role of preaching?
I think it just depends on the life of our church. It depends on the Sunday. I know, and I think you can kind of track the life stage of our church because it's so young. So it started off, really just setting a foundation of Christ. And, we started out in the book of Mark. So I say at the very beginning of our preaching as a church, preaching took on the element of just revealing who Christ is. And I know that there's laces of that for the rest of the church's existence. But then from after that, I think it was, we went into a series on teaching basically our identity in Christ. So, so the pulpit became a place of like more shaping. And now it's at this stage where, spiritual formation is a huge part of the pulpit, right now. So right with the size of the church that we have and the maturity level of the church right now, a lot of it's spiritual formation stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll use the, I see the pulpit right now in forming and shaping the church that is there right now. Now, if it was a church that was just starting off, like it would be I think it'd be a completely different, when we started out, my sermons were actually a little different than they are today. I'm not like, and this is going to sound really weird. I'm seriously not trying to grow the church any bigger. If God does that, he does that. But I feel really comfortable with the church. Gosh, I love a church that was like 250 people.
You don't want to do two services is what you're saying.
yeah, I think there's a, I don't know this. I mean, this doesn't have to do anything with preaching, but there is something to be said about like, gosh, knowing everyone in your church and them knowing you and the church being at a size that can happen. But right now, what I'm trying to say is if the church was smaller, my preaching would be geared towards people that are not in the room. And then feature people that are in the room to get the people that are not in the room in the room.
Yeah.
And now because it's really, really full in there, and we have very good and sustainable community life happening at our church. A lot of what happens in the pulpit is shaping like, okay, this is what's going on in San Francisco. You guys, we have this room is full of people who could bring about a lot of good and change in San Francisco. So it's shaping them. Forming them spiritually, spiritual formation, and then teaching them how to go out and then form and shape culture in San Francisco. That's what the pulpit. I see the pulpit.
So when you talk about how it has more of a spiritual formation bent now, is that you kind of doing proclamation and calling them as a congregation into who Christ has called them to be? Or do you see that even as something you're doing that's much more practical, giving a lot of practical application out of it?
Yeah, there is a lot of practical out of it, but the bigger, larger picture is that what Christ has called you to be and, your identity in him and then finding calling and discerning will and like, what are you here in San Francisco to do? How are you bringing about, the shalom of God in San Francisco? That sort of thing. And then breaking it down practically depending on the sermon. Sometimes it has a practical element of spirituality. Sometimes it has a practical element of holiness. Sometimes it has a practical element of righteousness. It just depends on the sermon.
Yeah.
Like, so this Sunday, we're in a series in Proverbs. So this Sunday will be, a whole vocational sort of what does work look like? How are we called to work?
Yeah.
So it'll have that sort of element to it.
Yeah. So, you know, okay.
So it just depends on the Sunday. So this Sunday, it'll have very practical implications on, and I've done this several times, on work, on what does it look like to have vocational call, in your jobs, in tech, in whatever you're doing in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so I think the audience in San Francisco is a bit different. Our audience is, I don't know, different than what, but our audience is very all entrepreneurial. They all want to learn. They all want to grow. They're there because they want to figure out how to do this spiritually. Like, so when they come in, there's already this like basis of, okay, I'm here for this shaping sort of environment, a learning environment. Most of the people that are at church, I'd say over 85% are college educated in our church. So they all have this desire to learn and want to grow and like figure out how to make an impact in the world. So it's not like me coming up and going, guys, you got to make an impact. You got to do something. It's more of steering a moving ship. They're already there. They already want to do that. And it's steering that.
Yeah.
And shaping that.
Okay. Well, you answered this a little bit. I know you don't use a lectionary because you said you're going through Proverbs right now. So
yeah,
how do you plan out and map out the sermons you're going to do series? Do you tend to do more text, you know, based stuff, or do you mix it with topical?
I mix it with topical, so I'll do text based stuff. Typically, we will go through our spiritual formation director, other elders in our church, other pastors in church. We sit down and we talk through like the teaching year, like what is the things that we, how do we want, what do we see the lack in our church, and how can we form that? How do we shape that? So going into this year, for example, there was a huge part of our church that seemed to be, we started as a startup church and we needed to move to become more of an enduring organization. So that took a lot of maturity. So our whole thing this year was spiritual maturity, and spiritual health. So every series, everything we talked about in small groups to Sunday mornings took on that shape.
Yeah.
So that's this year. So then right now, this summer, we're looking into next year. What does that look like? And so that process will be us sitting down going, okay, so have we seen real lasting change happen over the last year in a teaching calendar? And then as we move forward, how do we either add on to that or maybe God wants to go in a different direction altogether? So we take it year by year. The first several years was foundational in the book of Mark, the book of Genesis.
Yeah.
Those are the two things that we taught through the first 3 years of the church. So those were like foundational, like this is a good biblical theology of who Christ is and how we were created and how we were made imago Dei, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then now moving into maturity. So that's kind of how we shape the preaching calendar.
Okay. So why don't you walk us through then, just take us through your timeline of preparing any given sermon. Like, do you start several weeks out, 1 week out, and just walk us through that?
Okay. So I think I have a very unconventional, I don't really know. I've never taken a homiletics course or a preaching class in seminary. I never even really been to seminary. I've taken courses, but didn't go to seminary. I'm like a guitar player who taught himself how to play guitar.
Yeah.
Probably taught himself really like bad habits. So I have probably not good habits to transfer to people. So what I normally do is I will look ahead this fall we might go through the book of John. So I'll just start collecting books. I'll just start collecting commentaries. I'll start collecting books on topics and background, that sort of stuff. And I'll just collect all these books. And then as I'm going through, as I'm coming up to the teaching, I just read a lot. Like sometimes I feel like I have to read so much because I, all the stuff that I would have maybe wrestled through in seminary, I kind of wrestle through all over again as I approach topics. And so then I'll read background, exegesis, commentaries, that sort of stuff, do exegesis work, do commentary work. And then once I understand like the topics as they come out, the week of typically, I will study the topic in depth. So for example, this week vocation, actually probably a better example is like the last 2 weeks we've been talking about God's will. So I've read maybe 4 books on that subject after doing the work, and then I will start just collecting quotes, collecting stuff from the newspaper that I read every day, the magazines that are around San Francisco, just to get my context. And then start collecting like exegetical work, and then keep that I write it all down in a big old moleskin, and I just start taking notes and keeping notes. And then on Thursday, I'll have a sermon prep meeting. So I'll meet with a team of about 5 people, 4 people from our staff. And they're kind of studying alongside of me with this topic or thinking broadly about this topic. And then I'll just kind of pitch to them where I'm at, story arc of the sermon, where I think it's going to go. And they just either A, poke holes in it, add stuff to it, give me a clearer picture, let me know what they're reading, that sort of stuff. And then from there, that's Thursday. So then from there on Friday morning, I'll sit down and try to write or study more. Sometimes I write it, sometimes I don't. And then on Saturday, I take a Sabbath, so I don't do any sermon prep work at all. I sometimes don't even read my Bible because I'll turn into a Bible study to me. Like I'll figure out a way it fits into the sermon. And then Saturday night, I'll start writing again. And then I'll wake up around 4 a.m. on Sunday morning and finish. Sometimes I'll go in and finish the sermon Sunday morning. And sometimes it won't even be written by Sunday morning. Like it's just scattered notes and scattered thoughts and a general outline. And I'll actually script the sermon Sunday morning. So I want to get to a place. My goal is to get a place where the sermon's done by Thursday, but it's never done by Thursday.
Yeah.
It's normally done by Sunday morning at 8 a.m.
And what time's the service?
10:30.
What time's setup?
Well, the setup gets there around 7.
Yeah.
I get there around 9:30.
Yeah.
So that's what the process is. Just really, I don't really have a systematic way of doing it. It just is different every week. The elements are always the same. Is I read a ton and I process out loud because I'm more of a collaborative worker. So I'll process out loud with the team. And then I script everything, and then I walk up with a truncated version of the script, and then preach. And we only have I'll have like one shot of getting it right, so that's kind of a lot of pressure. That's not my favorite thing. Two services would be great for that, but so yeah.
So prior to Thursday, there's not really any structured actual sermon prep time as much as it's all intake and capture yep. ideas and kick them around.
Yep. Exactly. So on Wednesday, so my week looks like, Monday afternoon, I come into the office, take a couple meetings, Tuesday, all staff all day. And then Wednesday morning, I'm at home studying. So Wednesday morning, I will typically start, exegetical work, commentary work, landing on kind of like this is the text, and so this is what I want to pull out of the text. And then that will normally lead me into a topic of like, okay, this topic is really coming up. And so I'll usually then grab several books on that topic and then go deeper in that topic. And then from there, by Friday, I have a general idea of where I want to be in the sermon. So, yeah.
What do you think would happen? I mean, do you feel like that Thursday morning is critical for you? Just the interaction
yes.
with others, really sharpening it and...
Yeah, it is very critical. I've done series where I had no collaboration at all, and my thoughts aren't as formed because I've not talked it out with someone. With the collaboration process for me, it helps so much because I'm able to talk out and like almost try it out on the street to see how it goes. Kind of like maybe a comedian would do small clubs before he does a big show. So I'll try it out here. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense, or that actually does make a lot of sense. Well, what if you said this? And they help so much because they think the team thinks completely different than I do. Some of them are way more, it just depends. One's more philosophical. One's more, spiritual in the sense of spirituality. One's more logical. So it's just really good, like, to get everyone in the room. So for me, it's very, very helpful.
So what, as you're working through all that stuff on, I mean, it sounds like you're talking about John in the fall. It almost sounds like you're at least collecting books. Are you starting to even do any reading this far out?
Yeah, I will read, this summer. I take a break in every summer for about 5 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And a couple of those weeks are vacation. And then it's study. It's like I study for what's coming in the next year. So I'll just start collecting all kinds of books. What I normally like to do first is read a simple commentary before it gets more complex. So like with John, I'd read like Frederick, Dale Bruner, on John. And it's just a fun, like he just gives you all kinds of great nugs and insights into John. It gets me excited about the book.
Yeah.
And unless I'm excited about it, I don't want to teach it. If I just go straight to a technical book or go to start, go with straight exegesis, I get bored with it. My mind just gets bored with it and I can't do anything with it. I get drudgery. But if I read something that just really excites me creatively about the book, that I'm teaching or the topic I'm teaching, then I'm way more likely to, then I just start digging into what does that word mean? And what is this? How's that structure? And then I have a friend of mine, who's a professor at a Western seminary who kind of checks all my work. So I will send him notes. I'll ask him questions. He reads over stuff, sends it back, pokes holes in it, tells me to read this, tells me to read that. So it's really, really helpful. So I think my sermon process is very collaborative.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. So that's, I'm not as introverted as some pastors that I know are. I'm very extroverted. So collaboration is a lot to me. More introverted friends of mine, they just love to be alone with.
Yeah.
About a million books and then out pops a sermon and they kill. It's awesome. But that's not my personality. I'll go insane. unless I can study in like 4 hour chunks and I got to get out and be with someone.
Yeah.
So
as you're looking toward, let's say, John this fall, and you're doing all this reading, when you get to John, are you going to preach through pericope by pericope? That's a hard, I've never said that phrase before. That's tricky.
Pericope upon pericope. Yes, typically yes.
So you're not looking for themes to develop as much as you're just going to work through it.
Yeah, I'm going to work through it. I'm going to look for themes, but I find that with a book like John and a transient culture like my church, if I nerd out on themes, but they just won't get them because, I mean, if the series takes a year and a half to go through, gosh, my church will be a completely different church in a year and a half, just because the transience of the church and everyone, like most people travel, consult. It's just a very transient city. So I usually will try to take the themes a lot shorter. So even John, it could take a year and a half, but I'd love to see it done in like 9 months. So I'll just try to make everything more punchy, distill it down, for the sake of our church.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So then as you're doing all this long-term prep, where are you? Are you just I should even ask this. Are you an ebook guy or are you a paper book guy? Oh, there you go. He shows me the bookshelves.
Paper book guy. So I have obviously Kindle, whatever. And I typically will, with some of the books I get, I'll download both physical and digital when I travel. But most of everything I do is physical. So I'm a tactile guy. I love a highlighter, I love a pen, I love tabs. So I'll just tab everything, write everything down. I'll physically handwrite, transcribe certain, quotes and keep a book, of everything I learn. But I also appreciate Evernote and digital kind of, digital books, ebook format sort of stuff as well.
So mostly you're filling up like a Moleskine as you go months ahead, maybe. And then you can come back in September and say, this is all the notes I captured on John 1:1-8 or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's never as clean like that.
Sure.
But it's something like that. Yeah. I'll have a Moleskine of, usually have like 4 or 5 of different things. Like next teaching series I'm going through, I just collect everything in there. Next book I want to write and collect everything in there. And like books that I'm reading that don't have anything to do with anything, but just notes that I'm keeping from them. I usually keep one like that too. So I do that as well. I feel like for me, just the way my brain works, I love the concept of Evernote, but tagging and finding things sometimes takes longer for me than actual taking the notes. So I'll just keep physical journals everywhere. All over my office, there's just journals.
And you feel like you're able to find what you need out of that?
Yes. Because I'm more of a sight remember. I memorized by I remember that was on like in the middle of the Moleskine on the bottom. So I'll just turn there or I'll tab it a lot of times. So I'll just use tabs and tab whatever it is. So in the books I keep and I keep rereading, they're just tabbed to death. I mean, you just look on the top and like whatever it is that reminds me of what I want to remember from that book. But, so yeah, I usually keep a bunch of notes in Moleskines everywhere.
I think you're probably number 24 or number 25. I don't remember how many of these I've done now, but it is fascinating to me because there's a few people who have a similar system to you, which is they just fill up notebooks and they're not really worried about being able to find things because they just can, you know, maybe they remember which notebook it was and then it's enough visual that they can come back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm more of that. I love the idea. For me, that's pretty organized. When I'm able to write everything out in a Moleskine and keep it categorized, it's the easiest way I know I keep everything in one place. So I have a giant Moleskine that's just Proverbs. And so it's everything, all my notes on Proverbs.
This is where I like to get really nerdy. When you talk giant Moleskine, are you talking like the really big one or like the 8.5 by 5.5 one?
No, really I have one that's the real big one. Yeah. It's the size of a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I keep that with me. And it only comes out when I study. So it's at home and then I'll bring it to my office when I study. I hardly ever study at my office because it's way too busy here. My office at work, I usually study at my home office.
Yeah.
A lot more quiet.
And so you also said you primarily manuscript, but then you kind of distill it down.
Yes.
Do you handwrite that or do you?
No, I use a, I type that up. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I'll start with, with hand notes and then open up a document on my computer, title it the sermon that I'm doing. And then I usually keep two documents open, one that's like a boneyard and then one that actually is, that turns into the sermon I bring up on Sunday morning.
Say more about the boneyard.
Boneyard is you have a thought and you just write it out.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it gets cut and put in the boneyard. Sometimes you go to the boneyard and you're like, oh, that scrap is good. I'm going to put that back in. So I do. So I'll keep two documents open at all times. One, it turns into the actual sermon. One, I'll just cut and paste and throw it in a boneyard. And I usually have a boneyard pile for every sermon. There's like about 5 or 6 pages of just random stuff that didn't end up making the sermon.
Yeah.
Kind of like the editing process of writing a book. You just write because it's coming to your head and it's just flowing. And then when it stops and you're done and you just keep it there. And it might fit, it might not.
Yeah.
So how
long does your manuscript end up being?
It just depends on the sermon. Somewhere between, and I use a lot of spaces. So about 8 to 10 pages.
Okay.
I use a lot of open space for my own brain because just clumps of text. If I walk up there, clumps of text don't work.
Yeah.
So, I'll distill down a giant clump of text into like 3 or 4 bullet points or sentences or something like that. And then I don't typically teach, I know some really good pastors that usually use 3 points in a sermon. I just find that to be real constricting for me. So usually we'll start with a 3-point, 4-point scaffolding, and then the scaffolding will come down by the end of the sermon. And then they turn into movements of my own that the congregation doesn't know, yeah. on the sermon. So I usually start with like an open document. Here's 3 sort of points that I want to make in the sermon, and they're scaffolding that holds the sermon. And then by the end of it, they come down. And then what happens, what's left is like a 3 or 4 part movement in the sermon, sometimes 2 part movement in the sermon that, where I want to start and then where I want to take them by the end.
So it's almost like you see these as particular, it's the route you need to take to go from where you feel like they're starting and where you feel like the text should take them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm trying to think of last Sunday. I don't even remember the scaffolding part, but I know I wanted to start them with a little bit of calling into question the way that we try to discern the perfect will of God and then kind of dismantling that idea for a, more of a revealed versus hidden will of God. And then by the end, I wanted to get them to understand the discernment of sin, which rules out, or scripture that rules out sin, and wisdom that rules out stupidity. And then everything in there, is really good, blessable places that you can choose. So I had to start somewhere, dismantle some stuff, do some work in the middle of the sermon to build almost like this is what the scriptures teach. And then how then do we move forward and live in this?
Yeah.
So.
I like that movement concept because I kind of think of it the same way. And I know people who can do a 3-point outline every time and you don't even realize it's a 3-point outline.
Yeah.
But I tend to think that same way that this is where I want to get to. Like, how do we just kind of navigate our way through this? And
absolutely. For me, 3 points are, they're really restricting. I want to say something, but it doesn't fit in the 3 points and I feel like I can't say it. Or it just doesn't, cause I'm more of a, like, has to, if there are 3 points, you have to fit in perfectly. You have to go together. They almost have to rhyme, you know, and it's just silly. So I just can't do it. I just had to let go of it about 2 years into planting this church. I let go of the 3-point sermon. I mean, sometimes I'll do one,
sure.
But, I'll basically do like a three movements that the church doesn't really know. And I also found that I was putting so much time and energy into 3 really punchy points that no one remembered, that I didn't even remember.
Yeah.
The next week. I wouldn't remember them. So instead of that, movements were really helpful for me because I was taking them somewhere. So every sermon was like a story arc that had a beginning, middle, and end. So, yeah.
So how did you, this is a question I've never asked before. It's just coming along here. How do you feel like you learned to preach? You said you didn't do seminary. So what taught you this method or this skill?
The art of preaching has been fascinating for me. I've always loved, people who can hold a crowd, hold the attention of people, whether it's in film or in comedy or in sermons. And so I've always appreciated that. I've always loved that. I love the idea of a story arc. And so when I was really young, I'm 35 now. So when I was young, a young person doing junior high ministry teaching sermons, I would just listen to all kinds of different people who were teaching from, I mean, back then in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it was like, Rick Warren and, Rob Bell. And, I mean, those two I would listen to who are very polar opposites when it comes, but they're both of them are very dynamic, great speakers.
Sure, yeah.
And so I would just a steady diet of those two guys for years. And then there was a guy in Calvary Chapel Movement, and those are my roots. John Corson, who was a really good expositor as well and fun guy. And so I'd listen to him. So I would be shaped by all of these different guys who are all over the spectrum. They're completely different, but they had one thing in common. They were really good communicators. So I'd listen to them. And then when I moved to San Francisco, I listened to like, John Stott and, Hugh Palmer and Tim Keller, like a steady diet of those guys for 2 years. The first 2 years I was here, I listened to several sermons every week and just how to teach in a city. That's what I learned how to do, like, how do you communicate in a city like San Francisco or like London or like New York? And so, at the beginning of my preaching career, when I was young, I sound a lot like, sometimes it sounded like Rick Warren, sometimes it sounded like Rob Bell, sure. Sometimes it sounded like John Corson. And then when I moved here, there was probably the first year of the church, I probably sound a lot like, Hugh Palmer or without the accent or Tim Keller. And then you just kind of find your own voice. And I think I'm in a place now where, when I used to listen to Keller sermons, they would destroy me because I just want to say everything he said.
Yeah.
Cause he could story arc a sermon like probably no one else. He's just really good. And then now I think I have enough of my own voice and preaching long enough to where I can listen to a Bell sermon or a Keller sermon or whoever and just have my own like, oh, that's a good point. But I would say it like this and, have my own way of saying it. And, so these guys helped me to, the art of preaching, the art of like standing in front, having a story arc, knowing where you're going, knowing how to tell a good story, knowing how to bring people in, where to take them. And then all the exegesis part and learning how to say it rightly has been a process that I just hadn't been self-taught. Like I think failing a lot helped with that. I could say something and someone in the church walk up and go, I don't think that's a thing. I think that's wrong. And I was like, oh. He goes, have you ever read this book or this Bible verse or this book of the Bible? And when I was young, I didn't. I mean, I didn't grow up in church. So I'd go and learn and then say, oh, I think that was wrong. I shouldn't have taught that. So I'd go back. And so, but I think I've taught enough of the scriptures now where I think I have a good grasp of and read enough books on the scriptures now where, I mean, I still make mistakes, obviously, but so.
Yeah, as N.T. Wright has said many times, I know that about 80% of what I teach, or I don't know what number he uses, but 60% of what I teach is not correct. I just don't know which 60% it is. I just totally butchered that quote. But
yes. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. I just don't know which 60% is wrong.
Well,
so.
I know that we had technical problems, so I know you're going to have to go. This will be one of our shorter interviews. But before you do... what are some, just one of the questions I love to ask, what are some books that you found really helpful either for study or for even forming you as a preacher?
Oh man. There's this one, Homiletical Plot. I love book. And the reason why I love that book is just the little drawing that he does, a little loop drawing. I'm a visual person.
Is that Lowry? Am I remember that?
Yeah, right? I think so. Yeah. I don't have it here with me. It's at home. But what I loved about that is the story arc. So I love when someone will teach me with a story arc. So that book's like, okay, there's a beginning. There's a whoops moment. There's a aha moment. There's a, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So there was a thing that Bell taught, Rob Bell did years ago on how to preach, and that was really, really helpful. In my binder, in my preaching binder, at the very beginning of it, I'll grab it real quick.
Is that
his
Poets, Prophets, and Preachers that he did?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And the beginning, I retranscribed this in every preaching book or Moleskine I get. So I have one in front of me, and I put a quote by Keller and then this like thing from Bell. And the quote by Keller is a quote on contextualization. I read this pretty much every week. I don't have it memorized because my mind just doesn't do that. But anyway, I have it written down.
Yeah.
He says, contextualization is giving people the Bible's answers, which they may not want at all to hear, to questions about life that people in their particular time and place are asking in a language that forms they can comprehend, and through appeals and arguments with force they can feel, even if they reject them. So when I'm preaching, when I get confused, I will go to this passage right here that he wrote, and I will run my sermon through this. Hmm. Am I giving the people the Bible's answers that they may not want to hear to questions that they're actually asking in a way that actually forms them, they can comprehend, and then that will appeal to them even if they want to reject them? Am I doing that? And so I think about that all the time. And then when I want to think about structure, Bell wrote this thing out, and I keep this in my binder too. He just has just words, you know, how he does really well. He does a good job at doing it. And the words are reading the passage, information, story, question, picture, rant, action, insight, observation, statistic, declaration, and invitation. So I will turn here and go, maybe what this sermon needs is a story right here. Maybe it needs a rant. Maybe it needs a question. Maybe it needs a picture. So I will look. Or maybe it needs an observation. So sometimes I will sit and with all my notes and like, oh, this isn't going anywhere yet. I'll look at this. I'm like, oh, it needs an observation. And so then I'll go, what I want you to realize is, or don't you see that in our city that this is always happening? And so I'll just do an observation or look at what's going on in the text here. You might not see it, but observe this. Did you notice how? And so those moments will get me out of a writer's block a lot of times. And then he says, teaching is knowing and arranging flow. Teaching is knowing and arranging flow. And I love that because I think that's what a good sermon does. It's knowing and arranging the flow of the sermon. And I don't get there hardly ever, but I think the best crafted sermons have a beautiful flow to them where you're following their line of reasoning and you know exactly why they got to where they're at presently. And then they're taking you somewhere where you want to keep listening to go, okay, if you said that, then this must be true. And then he's answering that and he takes you somewhere. She takes you somewhere by the end of it to where you're like, oh my gosh, that was, you brought me somewhere. You took me somewhere. Thank you. That I think is a good sermon. I hardly ever get there, but that's my goal.
Yeah.
So
nice.
So those things I'd say form me.
Okay. Well, I know you have to wind down. So
yeah.
If somebody wants to, you know, hear some of your sermons or just keep up with what you're up to, maybe blog, Twitter, you mentioned books. Why don't you just tell us where people can keep up with what you're up to?
Our website is realitysf.com, realitysf, sanfrancisco.com. So that's where you can keep up.
Yeah. And yeah. Do you do Twitter or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. At David Lomas, Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, Dave, thanks so much. I'd love
John,
for this conversation
you.
To go on another 20 minutes, but I know you can't. So appreciate hearing your heart. Look forward to hearing more from you down the road.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the opportunity. This
yeah.
is fun.
Blessings.
All right. You too.